The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello and welcome to IGN's number one PlayStation show. It's the only PlayStation show we make here, but damn, we're good at it. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined today by Josh Dew.
Hello.
And Matt Kim.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for coming and hanging out. We are approaching the time of year when all sorts of things start happening and everybody has to scramble and go do those things. IGN Summer of Gaming is around the corner, which is sort of the catch-all event season, adventure time, for what was formerly known as E3. And, you know, it's the kingdom of video games has exploded into a million little sky islands, and we've got to, like, piggyback between those or paraglide or whatever.
Obviously, What are you referencing?
I know this might be a little bit of a shock for some of our PlayStation-loving listeners, but freaking everybody's playing Zelda right now. I think that that's sort of the elephant-shaped mythical beast in the room or whatever. Like, it is... It is a huge, huge, like, you know, watershed game, and it obviously is a Nintendo game. It's not on PlayStation, but this is the kind of game that is going to have, like, a lasting effect on all other games for, you know, the immediate future, or, like, maybe 3 years from now, but the immediate future after that. So we will be talking about that a little bit, but hopefully from a sort of PlayStation adjacent angle. We also have some cool, fun community stuff that we didn't get to last week. Huge thank you to everybody who had very nice things to say about our 800th episode. We had a real good time doing that. And we didn't even have a chance to read any of your kind messages. That said, a very cool game came out, which is Humanity. I was totally expecting this to be a PSVR 2 exclusive. I think I just that got lost in the shuffle somewhere. It's the Tetris Effect devs.
Yeah.
And it's which was also, you know, PSVR 2, but then also regular TV. I played a bit this morning. Matt, you've been spending a bunch of time with Humanity. What are your thoughts on Humanity?
I love it. I've been playing it for like about a week. I didn't review it, so I didn't have to finish it or anything like that. But I would spend some time like doing a couple levels here and there. It's just this really cool vibey puzzle game, you know, which I want to like describe as like Snake meets The Leftovers, you know, where you basically play as a Shiba Inu made of pure light, and your goal is to guide people to like the end zone, like the end goal, and you know, along the way solve various like physics based puzzles, you know. You get your people to jump and you know, climb up walls in order to get to the destination. And it's super cool. And actually, so I read an interview, I think in Edge magazine, about like how this project got started. And the really cool thing is that the physics behind the game, the all these people jumping and moving in the crowd stuff, was not originally developed as a video game. I guess the creator of the program is actually like a urban engineer or something like that. And this program was actually meant to like simulate just like crowd control, like how people can like navigate urban environments. And they were doing a presentation, and the CEO and developer of Tetris Effect and Enhanced like saw this and was just like, how do we turn that into a video game? Like, that looks cool. That's like a physics modeling project that I really like the look of. And I guess they just started talking about how to like turn this into like a full-on game.
That is so cool. I love that's like my favorite kind of tidbit, but I also love tech demos.
Yeah.
Like, do you ever mess with those like those browser-based ones where it'll be like, here's how like, here's how the water physics react to this sphere or whatever. And it's just, you know, you've got a couple sliders and it just like, it's not a game. It's just like a weird widget kind of.
Yep.
And it's hearing that somebody turned that into a game is extremely cool.
Yeah. It's apparently it was just like people just like this, like people were just like on the screen, you know, just moving in crowds, pushing each other and going a certain direction. And the developer was just like enamored by just how it looked. Like yeah. aesthetically.
So,
like,
I mean, for anyone who hasn't actually seen this, it's got DNA of so many like other wonderfully weird games that I would, I guess, classify as puzzle games. Like Snake, for sure. Definitely got some Snake, but it's also Lemmings. And it reminds me of Intelligent Cube a little bit, just aesthetically, the old PS1 game. And then it's also, I feel like it doesn't, it's a little bit Katamari-ish, like yeah, in tone especially. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Like just the feel like, of it, the game feel
of this Katamari.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does like, does it have like a bopping soundtrack too, or
it?
Oh yeah,
it's got a chill lo-fi soundtrack.
It's not bopping. It's okay. More
it's
like,
a chill lo-fi. All right.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of those like. I mean, I don't mean this as a slight against the game. It just reminds me of like mobile game ads. I don't know if you've gotten those where they're like you have like a
crowd. Oh, no, you're totally right.
And you're guiding like these. Yeah. And you're trying to get them to like the multipliers and like add more to your crowd and stuff like
that. Yeah. It's like the World War Zombie, the game, the mobile game. It's,
yeah.
Can you fight the zombie hordes? I'm like, this isn't. Why don't you just show what the game looks like?
Yeah. But I like that. I think they're tapping into that sense of like, oh, we like to see crowds of people, and I think manipulating a crowd of people, there's just something inherently satisfying about that.
Yeah, the thing I really like is, so you've got these, you know, you've got this herd of people you've got to navigate, and then you've got these guys that I think are just called Goldies. Like they're just big, they're just like giant golden men that you have to you have to collect. Some of them, they're like your sort of optional objectives.
Men.
Yeah, the golden guys, you
they're
know,
just innocent men.
They just look like the Oscar, the statue. These just giant gold men. You got to go get them. But
I like watch this gameplay, and I feel like I have an idea of how it works. But correct me if I'm wrong. But like to me, it just seems like, oh, I need to get these. I need to get a certain amount of people from point A to point B, and there's just obstacles in the way.
That's what I love about it, is that I was totally thinking it was going to be one of those like Lemmings situations where like you will be docked for every one of these people you lose. That's totally not it. It completely devalues humanity. You'll have like hundreds of dudes falling off a cliff while you're thinking about your next move. Not an issue. They don't care. It's the rapture. You're a Shiba Inu. Who cares? But no, basically you're this little light dog that runs around, and you put directional patterns on the ground.
Okay.
So you choose where they go, but it also has an element of platforming where you can't go. Like they'll come out of like a door, and they'll all start walking one direction. And unless you run over in front of them and put like a little arrow going the other direction, they're just going to keep going that way. So if they're all walking off a cliff, they're going to just be pouring off a cliff. and then you have to like hop up and go other places. There's like certain walls that they can climb up. You get different types of jumps that you can make the people do, but you can't do them yourself necessarily. So you have to like, I don't even know what you'd call it. You have to like morph into the, you have to basically crowd surf. Like you just, you're just this dog that just, and it makes like a very kind of weird noise, and you like dive in, and then you go, blah, 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 and you, like, you know, these people would be like climbing a wall, like World War Z. And you just be like this dog swimming up them, which is, it's a lot. It's a thing, but yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it. Would you describe it as maybe like a puzzle where you're trying to guide like a flow of water, but now it's like it's three dimensions.
It's actually, now that you mention it, it's kind of a BioShock pipe puzzle. Like it's kind of a pipe dream, but like
it's three dimensions now.
It's three dimensional, and also you don't get in trouble for spilling. You're killing.
You can waste as many as it takes.
The game makes it clear that they're not dying if they fall off the cliff. They will simply just be re-raptured into the loop.
I have been skipping the cutscenes. I don't.
Oh yeah.
There's a story.
The lore behind this.
That's where it feels very Katamari. Like it feels like Katamari filtered through Tetris Effect, where it's got this like, it's like you hear a voice. It's a strange voice. You're a dog made of light. Like it's got this. It's very weird game. It's one of those games where like trying to describe it, the more you say, the more it doesn't make any sense. But okay, like
Katamari.
Yeah, exactly. If you play it for like 5 minutes, you're gonna be like, I get it. And it's right. You know, and it's yeah, it's easy to figure out and then very frustrating and hard to figure out how to actually play it and win, get those golden men.
But when you nail it, like when the people are flowing and the gold men are in the crowd and everyone's getting to where they need to be, like you're just looking at it and you're just like, damn, this is awesome.
Right. Yeah, it's got that like flow state kind of thing to it. Actually, there's okay, the gold finger,
nice.
Old man, old member.
Thank you, man.
No, it's I don't know. It's nice that it's also on PlayStation Plus. Maybe whatever the golden man tier. If you're a part of the golden man subscriber, you can get it.
Is it PlayStation Plus Extra? That's it. I think
like the top two tiers. I think if you're in
those ones,
middle and the highest one,
right? Okay. And then I think it's like $30 otherwise. But it's just, I don't know, it's just like a really neat little game. I love that it's got PSVR2 support because, you know, a lot of people bought PSVR2s and I can't imagine they've had a whole lot to do lately. That said, it looks like PSVR2 is getting some new stuff, including a game about skateboarding, which is called, wait for it, VR Skater. We got a preview up on IGN, which is really wonderful. Nick Maye, who's guy who doesn't usually, he does a lot of our video stuff, doesn't usually get to go get his hands dirty and play games. He is like a diehard skater. And so he's got like a really good feel for what actual skateboarding is like. And he's saying this is much more, I don't know if realistic is the right thing because it's not necessarily trying to capture the feeling of being on a skateboard, but it's like, it sounds much more physics based than your average skateboarding game is. Like basically I honestly haven't put this thing on my head and actually tried it for myself, but like my understanding is aside from like, I think you use the sticks for directional input, and then what the board is doing is determined by where your hands are. Mm-hmm. So it's like a giant tech deck in VR is what it sounds like.
Huh.
Yeah. It's a trip, and it looks great. It looks gorgeous. I don't know how far off it is, but it's like, I don't know. It's if for people who are into skating and don't want to have to get steel rods put into their bones when they inevitably break them, this seems like a good alternative.
It's just like so hard. It's like one of those things, like, I feel like I just have to do it. Like, cause I don't, you said all this about how it works and I still am not totally sure. Like,
yeah.
I can't picture myself playing this game.
That's the problem with VR. Like you can show it to somebody, you can show footage and it's still hard to kind of grasp what the sensation is. Cause it's like you know, input is totally novel.
So that's super interesting because there's actually, I own a Oculus Quest 2, right? And there's a snowboarding game that a buddy of mine made called Carve Snowboarding, which is actually sounds pretty similar to what you're describing. And I think the best way I could describe it, having played like it's not skateboarding, snowboarding, but it's sort of like the snowboard is like a marionette puppet that you control with your hands, like with the controllers or whatever. But yeah, it's like same sort of general idea where the position of your hand sort of guides your snowboard. And if you lift up your like left hand and your like board will go up and that's how you do jumps. And if you lift up your back hand, you know, it'll do like tricks or things like that. And that's sort of like, I think the general vibe of maybe how you get a boarding game in VR to work, and it works pretty okay. Like I just get motion sick in VR in general. And so
that's my main concern. Like just watching this footage, it's like, oh, you're moving. And like, the fact that always trips me up is like, if I'm just standing there in my bedroom, like watching myself move, like that really messes me up, man. I can't
it's
do
like,
it.
I'm told it's like exposure therapy. Like the more you do it, the more you just get used to it. You know, like you just really have to like subject yourself to.
Yeah. I mean, some stuff is worse than others though. This, apparently I think you can play this sitting down, which is like, I feel like just very counterintuitive to skateboarding.
Yeah.
But unless you sit on the skateboard, I guess, like, I don't know, that in my experience, I don't know, like if I were standing up and playing this, I would probably fall over. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I think that's when you have that sensation of speed and you're on your own to balance, I guess if you're playing it sitting down, that's less of an issue. But yeah, I don't know. It's moving fast in VR is always kind of a gamble, especially if there's a lot of like kind of jerky movements, which is you know, that goes with skateboarding. So
yeah, hopefully like it feels more free flow, like, and smooth. Hopefully you're as good as the trailer, and then I'm sure it'll be fun.
Let's hope so. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see what's like. The thing that hit me about skateboarding is, I mean, skateboarding games, I think we've talked about this on the show before, like, they were everywhere in the 90s because extreme sports was really huge. And so people were making games based on it. Same with snowboarding and, you know, all that stuff, BMX to a lesser effect. But what constitutes a skateboarding game is like kind of like they often differ mechanically. Like, you know, Tony Hawk is very much one thing. And then, you know, you have like a 2D version like Ollie Ollie. And I always like Thrasher Skate and Destroy, which I feel like was much more, it felt more.
I don't remember that game.
No one does. It's not a great game, but it's funny because if you skate well enough, the cops come after you and you have to outrun them, but it's from their perspective. It's a whole thing. But yeah, like that one I felt like was much more like it's more tactile, you know? Like I replayed Tony Hawk when it came on, you know, that they remastered it. And the thing that kind of hit me is that it is so much more of a rhythm game than I realized.
Mm.
And I think I was just at peace with sucking at it as a kid and just sort of was, you know, I'd goof around, do some little flips and stuff and didn't think too hard about it. But like to get anything done in that game, like you need to have like a pretty good mastery of like the specific combo timing and all that. And it feels like less about what you're doing with the board itself in relation to the environment and more with like the button inputs, if that makes any sense. Whereas this, in this case, it is like, I mean, obviously the button inputs are what's making the board do what it does, but I don't know. It's
like Skate, the game Skate too. Like Skate was more about like the motion and
exactly. Like, yeah. Like Skate had like a very tactile approach to it. And like, that was also like a kind of weird learning curve, but like I went back and messed with Skate 3. I was on sale or something. And like that feels more like in line with kind of what I look for. And I don't know where I would fall on this one. Cause it sounds like it is like challenging on like a very, you know, it's like it's a very steep learning curve, which is in fact a half pipe, which you can go up and then grind along the top of it and then fall down. If you're good at it, you can do that with the learning curve. But I don't know. Like again, it's VR. You kind of have to try it for yourself to really get a feel for it. But I'm very happy that a new PSVR 2 game is in the works for all the people out there with PSVR 2s. So that's good stuff. Now moving on here, we talked about this. I mentioned this briefly. Everyone's talking about Zelda right now. Tears of the Kingdom is out. It is just like it's all over. It's everywhere. If you put on a PlayStation podcast to hear about something else, I'm sorry because we're going to address the fact that it exists. That said, if you are a PlayStation player who would like something Zelda adjacent to kind of scratch that itch of watching all these people doing all sorts of crazy stuff in that game, that's a tall order because that game does a lot of really wackadoo stuff that. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of games trying to copy in the you know, coming few decades, probably. That said, there are some pretty cool, like Zelda likes on PlayStation. So I figure we could kind of run down some of those and talk about, you know, how does it line up with that? For starters, this feels almost like just a too soon, but Horizon Zero Dawn, which of course came out the same day as Breath of the Wild or the same week or just right around there. But that's, you know, big, huge, massive, open, sprawling world that has crafting and it has using a bow and arrow a lot and it has you fighting enormous things in a very puzzle-like fashion. I imagine a lot of our audience is well aware of what this game is and what its sequel, Forbidden West, does. But, you know, figured I'd throw that one out there. They both have some, you know, some similar DNA to Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I guess it's just missing that, like, sandboxy part of it. Like, yeah. I think with Horizon, it became like the sort of like rock, paper, scissors sort of thing where like you just, match the color, find the weakness and like, there you go. Yeah. But with Zelda, it was always like, you know, just try it. And
No,
it wasn't that intuitive, I would say. It's just like, this could work. And then maybe it does.
I mean, that's a different, a really key thing. I remember there was a point where sandbox and open world were sort of interchangeable, but I think that's a funny thing to pinpoint because sandbox implies like just go play with your toys, like see what happens, build a castle, go nuts. There's a certain like added freedom to it. And open world is just kind of like, I don't know, The Witcher is open world. Like that's that you're not really, it's more like you can go wherever you want, but you can't necessarily do whatever you want. It's, and obviously no game lets you do absolutely everything, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's a thought. As far as really overt Zelda-like games, Immortals, Phoenix Rising, which I feel like is one of the first just really shameless Zelda ripoffs out the gate. This was, you know, Ubisoft's more kid-friendly game where you climb towers and unlock parts of the map and paraglide around and fight big monsters. I messed with this a little bit. Did either of you get a chance to play this?
No.
I know people who love it, though. I mean, how soon did it come out after Breath of the Wild?
It was like soon enough that people really were commenting.
So it was announced as Gods and Monsters. And
right, I remember that.
I think they flagged the gods part as being this might upset religious folks, and then Monster got upset the Monster Energy folks, and so they had to change it to Immortals Phoenix Rising, and they spelled Phoenix wrong probably because they didn't want to piss off the X-Men or something. I don't know. I remember when it was first shown off, I was just like, yeah, that's Ubisoft doing Zelda, all right. That sure is what that is. But I played a little bit of it, and I appreciate that they made a more kid friendly, a more colorful take on the Far Cry, Assassin's Creed, Ghost Recon Wildlands, whatever you want to call it, formula that Ubisoft is known for.
Yeah. I'm watching this footage now, and it kind of reminds me of, it looks like Fortnite, honestly. If I just kind of blurred my eyes a little bit, it's like,
well, I mean, I wasn't going to mention that, but Fortnite is obviously, if you want to play a game where you can run around a big green area and build stuff out of crap, then yeah, there you go.
I mean, maybe, Nintendo kind of stole it from them, to be honest.
Yeah. Fortnite invented building things. It sure did.
Yep.
I mean, that was everyone's borrowing from everyone else. Like Fortnite itself was like, what if we crossed Call of Duty with Minecraft? And it's like, all right, business guy, great idea. And then fast forward, it was a great idea. Chocolate and peanut butter go great together. What could go wrong? Okay. Then of course, while we're talking other free to play games that people love, Genshin Impact is. I never, have you, either of you messed with this at all? I completely missed this one.
Yeah, I tried it a little bit only because like I was curious to see what the thing is. And like, I don't think I have the brain to be like the brain that's wired for this kind of game. You know, like if your whole thing is you want to play a game that's pretty close to Breath of the Wild, but also collect as many anime characters as you can humanly do, then that's Genshin Impact. And it's like, the first part is cool, the second part I don't need that many characters, you know, I don't need them all. But
with all due respect to Genshin Impact, like looking at screenshots of it, it seriously looks like somebody modded Breath of the Wild and just put anime characters in there.
A lot, like so many.
Wait, what do you mean by collecting anime characters? Like,
it's like a gacha game, right? And so I don't remember the narrative behind it, right? But you play as the main character, and then you like travel this world, and then you enlist other heroes to join you on your quest, right? And so these characters all have their like own personality and powers and voice actors and stories, but you summon them. And then they become your, but it's like random, right? Like you're not like going through a set path and then collect it and then like teaming up with specific characters at specific times. You're just like, you're my buddy now, cool wind anime person.
That wind anime person.
Yeah. That seems like it's you know, evolving on the formula a little bit more, you know? It's not like super Breath of the Wild-y.
This is one of those games that I just looking at it's messed up because it is so close to what Zelda looks like that I'm like, I think just the weird injection of anime into it. And like, I'm okay with some anime stuff. It just, for whatever reason, this exact formula, just, it's like when I try to feed my dog cucumber or something, like, I'm just like, that's not food. I just go do something else. Like, I'm not, you know, and all due respect for people who are into it. Like, it seems like a really cool game that's gotten plenty of support. So good on that. We talked about this a few weeks ago. It was on PlayStation Plus. Chia. I always want to say the T. The T is silent. But this is a, you know, really small like indie studio, and this is very much got the sandboxiness to it, where you can go around and you can use magic to possess basically anything around you. the thing that it did so well, and you can slide down hills and jump and paraglide. Got to do the paragliding. Everyone's got to paraglide. That's what you got to do, get around. One thing this does that not enough games have done that I've seen is you can climb to the top of a tree and like pull it back like a slingshot and then launch yourself. And I don't think you can do that in Zelda or really any other games I can think of, but it's just a really, I don't know. It's a very, it feels toyetic. Like it's very, you know, tactile, fun to do. This is a cute game. It's very, very chill. I had a good time messing around with this. I, you know, sunk some hours into it. There's combat, but it's like, it's so back burner that you could pretty much just play the game and just like go around collecting stuff and turning into crabs or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like based on a real life location too, right?
Yes. God, I already forgot. I'm terrible. New Caledonia.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, which is,
that's super
which is
cool. Sweet. Yeah, it's the also, animations I don't know. Are like really satisfying. Just like watching like your main character like just jump and like flail. It's like, I don't know. She has longer limbs than Link. So it looks more satisfying.
Weird. You like it better when they've got longer legs.
I love it when the longer the limbs, the better, man. Like if they can flail their limbs and they're just like, you know, flying off of trees or swimming through water with big old legs and arms, then
big old leg. Okay.
I'm in, dude. I'm in.
I'm into
give me,
that.
Give me a Slender Man in Breath of the Wild. Like that's my, okay, sure. That's my hot take.
Why not? I think there should be a game where every time you do anything, you get slightly longer arms and legs.
Whoa.
Yeah. You don't level up. You just say every time you hit an enemy or climb something, it's just keep getting bigger. It doesn't, it's like hamster teeth. It just keeps growing until you die. Like it's just, you get cuts through your brain.
Until you can hug the world. That would be like, yeah, that'd be a new like Katamari style.
Katamari guys, wake up. Hug the World is here. We want to play that. That's
the
game.
Hug the World.
I don't know how we got on that. There's obviously like there's so many games that borrow from Zelda, and some of them borrow from the really old ones. And Tunic is one of those. That is I think it announced before they announced they were doing a Link's Awakening remake or whatever. But you're this cute little fox person, and you run around, and you have like a little sword, and it's shockingly difficult. Like it looks so harmless, and this is definitely a game that will kick your ass a bit. And it's got, you know, it's a Souls-like. And we're so accustomed to Souls like, you know, being made out of jagged, cursed iron and having, you know, skeleton hands. But this is like, no, it's cute. It's a cute time.
I miss this game. I think it's, is it coming to PlayStation at some point?
It did recently, I think. That came out. Yeah, it came out a while ago, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
It was very much heralded as like an Xbox exclusive type of thing. But it's, you know, I don't know. It's cute. Oh, and, I don't know. I was going to say side note, the Stray, the cat game is coming to Xbox, but like, I don't know why our audience would care. They already played that because that was on PS5 for ages. So yeah, I love that things get associated with whatever they launch on, and then they wind up coming to everything. And it's, you know,
right.
This is the one I thought I totally jumped out of order and our producer scrambling to figure everything out. Sable sounds like it's about a little furry animal, but it's not. It's actually, it's, you know, Breath of the Wild-esque, but it's totally looks like a Mobius painting.
Yeah.
And I mess with this for a little bit. I remember it being not, it chugs. Like it has some, I think some technical issues or it did at launch, but it's got the sort of Miles Morales, sort of choppy animation to it. That's sort of deliberate, but then it also occasionally has hiccups that aren't, but yeah, you run around, you climb stuff, you get these sweet looking speeder bikes. It is so like Mobius, like classic heavy metal magazine that I really adore that about it. And I didn't stick with it, or
it,
you know,
because it chugs sounds like a compliment for when it's not about game performance, you know, like, oh man, you go to the show last night, it chugged.
Yeah. it's like it slaps at a lower frequency. I don't know. No, this has some like fun puzzle, but yeah, I think it was really like just kind of technically clunky, you know, like it took it, but I mean, it's been out for a couple of years now, so they hopefully have tightened some of that up. I love the aesthetic to it. And there's, I don't know, there's so many games that strive for like, make it look as graphically impressive as possible, but it's like art direction can do a lot of heavy lifting. And, you know, Zelda is a good, you know, testament to that. And I don't know. See also Borderlands, cell shaded more
music
shit.
From Japanese Breakfast.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I don't. They made a joke about that on that show Shrinking, and I've been trying to think why I know who they are. Oceanhorn is sort of an infamous. This is a We Have Zelda at Home. I feel like every time I say Zelda, one of our listeners just unsubscribes. They're hopefully not too mad, but you know.
Oceanhorn?
Oceanhorn, yeah.
I've never heard of this.
I think it started on mobile. I typed Ocean Haunch. That's not what the name of the game is.
Haunch.
Ocean Haunch Chugs.
It's got a lot of
dungeons and stuff. Like this one is fairly shamelessly. We also like Zelda. Like it's one of those games. There's a lot of those games because it's a massively influential series that's been around since basically the inception of modern console gaming. So of course people are going to borrow bits and pieces from it and try to keep up with where it's going. Yeah, I don't know. It's cute. It's got some you know, Wind Waker-ness to it. You like having a character with a blue tunic? You got it. Put on that turquoise shirt, my friend. Have a good time out there. Go check out some trees, some chests, some gems. Who knows? On a similar note to Tunic, Death's Door was a really cool one that I messed with for a little bit. That actually, I think everyone is really looking forward to Tunic is like, oh, it's a cool little Fox game. It's like Link's Awakening, but it's a Souls-like. And then Death's Door was like, yeah, we did that first. Here it is.
Yeah.
You play as like a little plague.
It's true.
Doctor. Yeah. Yeah.
Little crow. It's a literal crow. Yeah.
Did you guys play this one at all?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. Yeah.
I was really into this one. Like, I really liked the art style and kind of the color palette of it all. It was like really moody, but not too like grim. Mm,
story. That is exactly it.
It's like the right amount of creepy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like got lots of cute stuff, but it also did a good job of having that sense of isolation.
Yeah,
you're just kind of wandering around an overworld, and you're like, what do I do? And you go around a corner, and there's something. Kicks your ass and you're like, oh, video games are cool. Like get beaten up by a stranger in a field.
I really like that one. I think I 100%ed it, which was it was nice. A trip.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
On a similar note, going around in a field, getting your ass kicked, Elden Ring. Obviously, people are making plenty of comparisons between that and, you know, I saw one thing that was like, It was like, Tears of the Kingdom isn't doing anything that Elden Ring didn't do. And I was just like,
what?
I don't know about that.
What are you talking about?
I love Elden Ring. I love Elden Ring so much. Yeah. But also, like, you cannot make a Gundam out of wood in that game.
Yeah, exactly.
Worse at it than I thought.
So I think the thing that we said about Horizon applies to Elden Ring too. Like, Elden Ring is an open world game as opposed to Zelda being a sandbox game.
Correct.
Like, you can't like create a robot or something in Elden Ring. But at the same time, one big difference I think between Elden Ring and Horizon is that Elden Ring has that same thing that Zelda does, where if you like pick a direction, you'll just wander into something crazy and fun.
Yeah.
You know, like Elden Ring and Zelda both are the games where like you really can just go wherever you want on the map, and then like you're just going to step into something that's going to turn into like a whole adventure, like a whole separate adventure.
Yeah. That's what I really loved about it. It's like when I was playing Elden Ring for the first time, I thought it was going to have more of that traditional, I don't mean to say traditional, but like kind of the open world style that we see nowadays, where it's like, oh, here's a point on the map, just go to it. And then when I discovered, I was like kind of struggling with it. And then when I realized it had that like Breath of the Wild, just like, just go anywhere you want. You don't have to fight everybody either. You can just like check it out. That's when I really kind of got in the groove of it and had a really good time. And I think that's like kind of the thing a lot of open world games are kind of missing nowadays, is that really good sense of exploration. Like,
yes.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I was playing all the Assassin's Creed games, like, back when they were coming out and stuff, and like I had a great time. I think that's how I kind of found my I play a ton of open world games in general, and like that helped me get into it. But Breath of the Wild was the one that was like, oh my gosh, like I don't know what I'm gonna see when I go over this like hill crest, and I'm so excited to see what's on the other side, you know. And not a lot of games nowadays kind of do that. And I hope that that's the main lesson that these open world games are going to learn from Zelda, is that you really want to imbue that sense of, I can't wait to see what's on the other side of this or around this corner.
No, I think there's a lot of emphasis on exploration and not enough on discovery. Like it's very important to have a reason to make people want to go check stuff out, but also, I don't know, these things need to, you know, work together. There are these games that come along, and like there are these huge, massive games, and you know that there are a whole bunch of like, you know, game directors and businessmen and studios being like, how do we do that? We need one of those. We need to make one of those too. And I worry that, like, I don't know, the takeaway from Elden Ring is like, oh, just make it harder. And it's like, that's not, I don't know, that's not the charm. The charm is partially having to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, detutorialize some stuff, like make it a little bit more about player discovery. And if you're, I don't know, if your systems are too hard to figure out for the player on their own, then like maybe that's like, I don't know. Elden Ring is, you know, complicated, but it's also, you make sense out of it. You know, you can, mm-hmm. you can figure it out. And yeah, this game spoiled us so much with its traversal. I feel like it was so generous with checkpoints. Mm-hmm. It was so good. You had a magical deer that would come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You could just jump off a cliff and summon it, and you just get on top of it. It was great. I love that. Going from that to Jedi, I didn't go directly from that to Jedi Survivor, but like Jedi Survivor, I was like, okay, they got some more meditation points. That's mm-hmm. good. All right, I better summon my trusty steed. And then this like purple dinosaur thing would like show up like 17 feet away. And I was like, almost, come on over here, buddy, get over here. And then I jumped into Zelda and I'm like, all right, got to go find some place, some checkpoints. And I like got to the first tower and they're like, it's broken. Can you fix it? And I was like, no, I can't fix it. And I can't fast travel there yet. So I was just like, no. Well, I call my horse to get out of here. And I like whistle. And it's like, yeah, man, your horse ran away, dude. It got caught on fire. It doesn't want to hang out with you. I'm like, I don't know. I miss Elden Ring.
Because sometimes, you know, you think, oh, you got to have a world where like the cool thing is like a new tool or item or anything like that. Like Elden Ring did a thing where sometimes the cool thing was just getting murdered by something absolutely ridiculous, you know, like just being like, oh, I wandered into this like spooky cavern and I don't really know where I am, but I guess I'll just keep going in. And like inside it is like the most horrifying insect man that you'll ever see. And and that's the cool thing. Like the cool thing is the monster that murders.
Well, I love that like Miyazaki did some interview and he was saying how like every death should be a punchline. And,
yeah,
I mean, it's at times it's comical and at times it's frustrating. But if you stop and think about it, like the deaths that are like frustrating is when it's the same boss repeatedly. You know, that's when it gets really annoying. But when it's like, and of course, if there's like one little archer that, like, when you're like right about to go cash in your souls or whatever, and some guy just like one shots you or whatever, mm-hmm. that stuff sucks. But at the same time, it's also pretty funny. Like, it's like watching Wile E. Coyote get his ass kicked. Yeah. Oh, that man certainly beat me with a large magic hammer. It was my fault for starting a fight with a guy on a 12-foot tall horse. I should have known better. Now, finally, I want to say maybe the Sonic Frontiers. Is that a Zelda-like by a long shot?
I want to play it. I haven't played it yet.
Oh, you don't want to play it, man.
It looks ridiculous.
I messed around with it. I had an okay time with it. It's definitely it's got Koroks. Why didn't you like, you love Koroks, Josh? You love to collect them.
Mm-hmm.
They're called like Tweeblings or something, but they're in there. There's some sort of.
I guess the formula should make sense, like a nice big open world, but you can go really fast, right? Like that sounds all right. Like, I think one of my biggest issues with Zelda right now is like, I still haven't been able to get a horse. And so I've been just like hoofing it.
Mm. It sounds like you're not hoofing it.
yeah, I'm hoofing it with, you know, little Hyrulean legs, but I need longer legs, longer arms. My point being, Sonic Frontiers, when I started playing it, it doesn't feel like you're controlling Sonic. Like, when I was playing it, it felt like I was moving a map with Sonic in the center of it. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense.
Yeah, right? It's so weird. I couldn't... He's so light, I think, that there's no weight
to him. He's a free spirit. He can't be controlled.
Yeah.
He wants chili dogs. He's got to go fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that was like... I mean, it definitely took its very obvious influence from Breath of the Wild, but it also, I don't know, it tried some cool stuff, and it's... I don't know. I'm also always happy to be like, it doesn't always pan out, but for like a beloved franchise to be like, all right, but now it's open world. I'm like, I don't know, let's see what happens there. I want an open world Crash Bandicoot game.
Yeah. I think part of the issue for me too is that the way they incorporate the Sonic-isms, you know, the rails and like bouncy stuff, it didn't feel like ingrained into the world. It's like, oh, here you are in a very like nature setting. It feels like Northern Scotland, but like,
yeah, it was Death Stranding, but Sonic floating. Was there.
Yeah, this is Death Stranding world, but then rails are floating in the sky and like there's bounce pads. It's like, okay, where did these come from? It just felt odd. It was a
you've never been to Scotland, Josh. Misdirection. Shows.
Sorry,
you've never been to Scotland, and it shows. There are rails everywhere.
Yeah, Sonic is Scottish. Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, I want to see a Scottish Sonic. Oh my god, that's so hard to say. A Scottish.
I bet
Sonic.
You there's. I bet I'm not going to type that on my work computer. But if you type in Scottish Sonic the Hedgehog, I bet you're going to get some great dreams creations and homemade videos. All right. Anyway, last week we had a big show, a lot of stuff to talk about. And one thing we didn't get to was some wonderful PlayStation memories from our dear listeners. Jada went and got a bunch of people to chime in on the Facebook group. And so I figured I could share some of those. Some of these are very sweet. One of them is very funny. So let's dive right in. Stewie Hunter says, my favorite PlayStation memory was when I got my PS3. Fair enough. I was 13. We were going through a tough time financially as a family. My mom called over 50 different shops in the lead up to that Christmas to find a PS3 for me, and had finally found one, but it was a few hours drive away. My mom had nobody to come with her, and she was afraid of going on her own, so she told me, or she told me. The hours went by quickly, and my heart was in my chest as I got to pick up the PS3 with Resistance, Fall of Man, one of my favorite games ever now, and a Formula One game. We kept it secret from my dad that I knew I was getting for Christmas that year, and it wasn't lost on me how hard of an effort my parents put into saving for the perfect present. We didn't really have much back then, so if anything, I expected to skip Christmas that year. That console treated me well, and is easily the console I hold most dear in my heart. That's sweet.
Yeah.
That is really sweet. I wonder if their mom, like, yeah, wanted to spoil them with the surprise or not, or like...
At least one parent got to like have it be a surprise, you know, like that's such, but it's also like that, God, what an awesome mom to like, to be like, hey, I'm really killing myself to get this thing for you. I'm sorry that you're going to have to come along with me, but you know, I don't know.
Or maybe she got really selfish and was like, I want to see the joy on my child's face.
I want the joy first. I want
my husband. Yeah.
I want to pilfer this joy for myself.
Yes. Yes. Give me the joy.
I don't know. That's the thing I'm doing. Like my kid is most excited about the wrapping paper at this point. Like she's two, but like my wife and I do stuff where we get like, we'll get presents and not tell the other one. And so then it's like a surprise. At least somebody's like cares about the present as a surprise. So like she'll open it up. She's like, oh, it's a velociraptor costume. And my wife is like, oh, it's wonderful. And my baby's like eating wrapping paper. Just tries to. Yeah. Igra Asad Khan says the best PlayStation gaming time of my life was playing Final Fantasy X-2 and 12 on the PS2. Those, that classic duo that goes together. Just my father saw three girls on the cover of X-2 and got it for me, and I played it without caring. It was a sequel. I hadn't played 10. I got to see badass Yuna and girl power, and it was only decades later when I finally got it on PS4 that I tried 10 and found out how dreary Yuna's origin story is. I still haven't finished 10, but I have replayed 10-2 countless times. This experience has made me pick up and enjoy other RPG sequels without bothering to start with the first one in the series. I always have a grand time with them. I love that.
Yeah.
I think
you don't know about 10-2? About like the concept of it?
They're like pop stars or something?
Yeah.
Like magical girl transformations?
Pretty much.
That's cool as hell. I mean, yeah. I honestly was a teenage boy when that came out. I was more inclined to check out 10-2 than 10. G Short on Ideas says getting a PS1 for Christmas with Croc. That game doesn't hold up, but it was my childhood. I love that Croc was like just a Gex who didn't try so hard.
I love that too. Like always, there's these games that you hold very near and dear to you, and you know they suck ass.
Yeah. What's yours?
Mine is Star Wars Super Bombad Racing, my man.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. That was one of the first like PS2 games I ever had, and I was like, dude, this is Star Wars and it's Darth Maul and it's, you know, karting ish. But
yeah,
it's great.
It's the thrill of those movies. It's the monomyth.
There
everyone
it
loves. It's the Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey to have an enormous head and do weird little jumps.
What's yours? Your nostalgic bad game?
I don't know. Matt, what about you? I've got probably too many.
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot too. I think I'm gonna catch a little flack for this, but one of the Crash Bandicoots do not hold up.
Ooh.
I don't remember which one. I think it's the first one. I think I go back to the first one sometimes because of the HD collection or the remaster, and I was just like, this was not what I remember it.
Kenneth Rasmussen says, my fondest memory is also a cornerstone in my identity. I remember playing Final Fantasy VII at age 12 or 13. I'm 37 now, and I wasn't used to long games like RPGs, so when I left Midgar and stepped into the world map, my entire perception of video games changed forever. Yeah. Those moments are like, they're kind of few and far between these days, but I feel like the last time I really had that was the elevator in Elden Ring. It keeps going. It's just
what is it, the down elevator, right? Or the what's the name of that area?
The downstairs glow in the dark basement.
Yeah.
The,
yep. That yeah. one. Yeah.
Underground blacklight poster, whatever it's called. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
The place with the blue deer or what the polar bears that try to or yaks or whatever they
the yakmen.
Yeah.
Yakmen.
It's where they keep the Christmas decorations down at the bottom of that elevator. I don't know. I like that you go down one. It's like this beautiful thing. You're like, oh, I can see the stars. It's really magical. It's wonderful. And you go down a different one, and there's just like 15 foot long ants that set you on, that like bite you or piss on you or whatever.
God, I hated that. Yeah.
They're mean. This is a good game, except for those ants.
They make terrible sounds when you kill them.
Yeah. Awful. Nothing in that game sounds good when you kill it.
Yeah.
No. That game is a lot of displeasure.
What are your last sort of like big reveal moments that are like a thing where you're like, oh, I didn't realize this was this big of a game?
Ooh.
Anything come to mind?
I don't know. I think my first like even exposure to like open world games was Spider-Man 2 for the PS2. And I didn't even know that game. I didn't even know the concept of open world really, but like, I just knew you got to play as Spider-Man. And then when I realized, I'm like, oh, I get to like swing on buildings. I get to be on top of buildings. I get to be on the street, like just like top to bottom, just like New York. It was awesome. And I never owned it. I rented it from Blockbuster and never had a memory card. So I just start from the beginning every time I borrowed it. but that that game, I think, was like really mind blowing for me, just in terms of like, I don't even like, I have nothing to do, but I'm having fun just like dicking around.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that goes a long way. Mm-hmm. I love that. Like the next Spider-Man has like such, it has like such a reputation to live up to that also has nothing to do with it. You know, like people think like, ah, a PlayStation game called Spider-Man 2. And it's like, that's the one that we're like, people are going to be comparing it to, even though it's obviously like a completely different one.
You got to call it Insomnia or Marvel's Spider-Man 2.
Right.
Yeah. I want to see DC's Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Give me gritty Spider-Man.
Not gritty anymore, right? Not after new ownership.
Probably that's right. Gritty. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Matt, do you have any like big reveal moments in games that come to mind?
So I think, when was the last time I was on this podcast? Like 4 months ago, 5 months ago?
And you were on for like 10 minutes and then you had to go like interview Troy Baker, I think.
Right. That was fun. And I think at the time I was talking about my Metal Gear Solid. I'm going to beat all of Metal Gear Solid for the first time thing. So I'm still on that. I'm like 10 missions away from the ending in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Are you doing all of the annoying side stuff where it's like,
pick me
a single flower, or like these three guys deserve to get ballooned or whatever.
I don't know if it's side stuff, but I'm at the part where and it's like an old game, so I don't like it's spoilers for Metal Gear Solid 5, but like, you know, the last end of the game is all just like harder versions of earlier missions. Like the moment I hit that stretch, I'm just like, this is, it's kind of a chore, but like during this time I was playing Metal Gear Solid 3, and like I didn't play that when it first came out, but I played it like last year for the first time, and then I'm like, oh, this is why people love this game. It's massive. It's ginormous. It's also like one of the best games ever. I understand now. I understand what you're talking about.
I love this game so much, just so much. The thing that, I mean,
go ahead.
It's a tricky open world, you know, because it's like it's got a pretty long lead up to get to it. And then as far as it being like a true sort of like, go from one thing to the next, like there's like little pockets, you know, like there's parts where things sort of interact with each other. But for them, it almost feels like just sort of, I don't know, like I always wish that you could kind of just really take the helicopter anywhere. But in reality, it was kind of more of like a disguised loading screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, it's such a immaculate game.
There are portions of this game that are sandboxy, like being able to use some of your tools for like its unintended
purposes. You can be in a box in an area covered in sand, so it is literally sandboxy in a number of ways.
I feel like I've never played this game, but like the clips I've seen from it now that you're mentioning it is kind of reminding me of like what's happening now with Tears of the Kingdom, like people just doing like the most wackadoo stuff with their gadgets, right? Like
people,
I mean, that's intended use.
That's always been like my favorite thing about Metal Gear is just screwing with the enemy AI. Like just, it's always just been like, you torment them, you do weird stuff. Like, I don't know, like in two, you could tranquilize her, a smiley face onto like a dude's head and then spray him with like with nitrogen and he would wake up, and you could, you know, point a gun at his crotch and he would like dance around and give you his dog tag. There's just like weird, it accounts for the fact that players are going to do weird stuff.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that like, I could be mistaken here, but I feel like open world games for the most part are like a Western product. Like, you know, GTA pretty much introduced the concept. It's been, Skyrim, Western studio, like Japanese stuff typically is a little bit more cordoned off. Like it's more, more structured, I guess. And like you see this with Yakuza, like you can run around and do stuff, but it's also like, I don't know, when you get in a fight, it like is a whole separate, like it's a whole ordeal. Like it doesn't just happen within the environment. It's kind of like, oh, it's, you know, these people are going to just, they're going to tell you it's a fight and then it's a fight. And then, I don't know, it's kind of nuts to me that like Metal Gear Solid 5 and Breath of the Wild both took these like ancient franchises and just completely reinvented the formula. And it's like, you know, they obviously are using elements of stuff that was sort of prototyped by, you know, Ubisoft games, like, you know, Far Cry 2 or whatever, but like it just did such an amazing job. And they both seem to account for the fact that players are going to do weird stuff. Mm-hmm. Like they're very much tool sets. Like they're like, here you go, here's a box of toys, go have fun, like go see what you can do with it. And yeah, I don't know, other games are a little more structured. Anyway, James Napoli says buying the network adapter for the PS2 and playing my first online PS2 games, which were Tony Hawk and Madden, but which quickly led to playing SOCOM with my buds. I think for many console gamers, this was our first foray into playing online games. Getting broadband, getting a headset, scheduling Sunday night after Sopranos, meet and room platoon. It was marvelous. What's your earliest memory of online gaming?
Oh, it was my friends in middle school. They were trying to get me to play Counter-Strike with them. And they were really patient with me to help me set it up. And I think what was that voice chat service back in those days?
Ventrilo.
Vent.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're making me install these programs. I'm like, dude, like, why do I got to jump onto these hoops? And I sucked ass at it. And I since later learned that Counter-Strike is like even its own brand of first person shooter. But it was a pretty mind blowing experience, I think. Yeah.
I played a lot of Tribes too, I think, because they had like a shareware build or something, or like there's one map that you could mess around on. And that was, as far as like multiplayer shooters go, that was like a massive open area. It wasn't open world, but it was like a really big map that you could, you know, goof around on. And there was like, I think you had like jet boots or something. I haven't played that in a million years, but yeah, that's one of those franchises that kind of came and went.
Go ahead.
It's a first person shooter competitive thing, but I think you just had like kind of wackier traversal. Like you could do cooler ways of getting around. I didn't really do any online gaming on consoles until pretty late. Like it's never been a thing that particularly appealed to me. Like I screwed with it a bit on when I was, you know, played on PC growing up, but that also, the internet was like, I can't imagine that being a good time. You know, you're on like a 28.8 connection and there's just, I don't know, like I'll get killed by lag now. And it's like, this is the future. I'm on like fiber. Like, what are we, you know, we're talking over the internet now. It's wild.
Those things are like, you need the friends, you need the good set of friends that are like down to also buy the game and carve out the time. And it's hard finding a game that all your friends like to play. Yeah.
But when it gets there, like the friends I played Halo Reach with in high school are like friends with me today, you know? Like that's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had friends. Mm. It's really fun. A bunch of people we work with all like also got really into Fortnite, and I play with them like twice, but there's like a group that all gets together and I don't get to play with them. Like I don't
they have a secret just like, group without you, the non-next. No. Like
I'll hop on it like whatever, you know, if I have a free night or something, and then, you know, after I turn off my PlayStation, I'll like check my phone and I'll have like a text is like, hey, you want to squad up? And I'm like, oh no, I missed them. Aw. I don't know. My multiplayer experience was LiveJournal. Like I would just get in fights on the internet with people in there. Jake Jackson says, my dad and I are very different people, but have always bonded over PlayStation games. As a 4-year-old, I watched him play through Metal Gear Solid. Wow. Psycho Mantis is still the coolest boss I've ever seen. 2 years later, he watched me beat the game before dropping me off to school late. Man, 6-year-old. Later, I watched him play MGS2 and MGS3 before beating those myself, too. Later again, the first console I bought with my own money was a pawned PS3. This time, my dad watched me play through Metal Gear Solid 4 first. Mm-hmm. 29 this year, and Metal Gear Solid are the only retro games I still own. Kojima is art and all that, but really, it's these memories playing PlayStation with my dad that makes Metal Gear Solid series my favorite. I'm right there with you. That was a big bond. I didn't do like a ton of multiplayer stuff, but like my best friend and I got super into Metal Gear together. And it's funny how that was like, that was kind of an entry point to anime too. Like it's a very, you know, obviously it's very like anime infused, but it came out in 1998 and you know, it was like the early days of Toonami. Like it was such a different, you know, I don't know. It just opened. I mean, it got me into John Carpenter movies like that. I owe Kojima that one. Troubadour Monsi says, as a junior high student, I came home to have my N64 stolen by someone my mom was renting a room to. My parents took me to Target to buy a new Nintendo, but I thought to myself, this is an opportunity to try something new. I saw a game I always wanted to try. With the budget my dad gave me, I could actually afford to buy two games. I ended up buying my first PlayStation console with Resident Evil Director's Cut and Metal Gear Solid as my first two entries into the PlayStation wow. world. Though I'm now console agnostic, the memory of watching RE cutscenes or how painstakingly detailed games like Metal Gear Solid could be, I knew PlayStation consoles would be a part of my gaming life forever. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Good picks.
Yeah, right? That's like, really? That sucks when your like first exposure to something is like the pinnacle of it. Like when you play something really, really good and you're like, all right, what else is there? And it's like, sorry, sir, that was our finest heroine. You're like, yeah. Oh no, what now?
Exactly. Gotta start low. You gotta start with those like terrible games.
Yeah.
Be like, you how gotta can start with get Croc. Better than this?
Maybe that's in defense of really crappy games. Is that's mm-hmm. the trick? Is that you gotta start with the bad stuff. You gotta start off with garbage and then work your way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Brian's introducing his daughter to all the Zelda games and stuff. I'm like, dude, you can't start that high. Like maybe you should start with something really crappy. Show her some mm-hmm, knack, mm-hmm. And then like maybe work your way up.
Hey now.
I'm sorry. I forgot what podcast I was on. My bad.
We respect knack in this house. Yeah. No, I don't know. It's gonna be such a weird thing to see what I don't know, like kids who are growing up with games now. Like there's such a massive like just breadth to them. Like mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm old. I remember when it was like 3D was new and you're like, whoa, other dimensions like that. Yeah. I remember thinking like, oh, maybe VR will be the next paradigm shift. And it's not, you know, it's just sort of, yeah, I don't know.
I still just remember like playing a PlayStation 2 game and just being like, this is it. Graphics will never become better than this.
Oh yeah.
Or Olga Gurlukovich is the most realistic character ever put in a video game. And I went back and played Metal Gear on the remasters level. I was like, I don't know about that. She did. I mean, they gave her armpit hair. Like that's, you know, that was advanced for the
fidelity,
the power of the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's the story that I really love. This is very silly. Christian Leadbeater says, Heavy Rain has become the standard for controller shaking in QTE game jokes after QTE jokes after a mate and I tag teamed our way through it in a couple months after release. It was, appropriately, coming into winter, and so, lacking a decent heater, we both pulled blankets over ourselves. I was given the controller just as the game came to Madison's first scene, and my mate ran off to grab some drinks. Controller? Hidden beneath the blanket, I played through the section where Madison takes a shower before the game asks you to dry her off by shaking the controller. It was around this time that my mate returned to the room, looked at the TV where the digital avatar stood in the buff for all to see, and then at me, hands under the blanket, furiously shaking my DualShock 3. Needless to say, not a good look, and from there on out, any games that have asked us to shake the controller have been diagnosed with Heavy Rain syndrome.
That's a great story.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I don't know. This is, thanks to everybody who wrote in and you know, shared. Oh, there's one. Multiple people said that the infamous ham episode of this show was one of their favorite PlayStation memories. So sorry. And thank you, I guess. yeah. Thanks to everybody who wrote in and shared their fun stories and thoughts and all that. Josh, Matt, thank you for hopping on shooting the shit, talking about stuff.
Yeah.
We will be back next week with, I don't even know what's going on. I hope there's exciting new game stuff. I want to hear stuff from Sony. I want some big summer things to get announced, but we'll have to wait and see what happens there. I think hopefully they tell us when the Wolverine is coming to my house. I want him to come over, hang out with me. That's all I want.
Hey, bub.
Just don't play Heavy Rain on your DualShock 3 under the blankets.
Yeah.
Wolverine would not tolerate that. He wouldn't like that one bit. Wouldn't put up with it. I don't know. Yeah, on that note, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next week. Beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues, and it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.